Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
Brian Brushwood.
Mahoy. It's different from Mahoy. Mine is Mahoy because my name's Brian.
And super producer extraordinaire, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
See, I can't get a Bahoy because Brian already took the Bahoy.
I took all your Bahoys.
My Bahoy belonged to you?
That's right. I get all the Bahoys in the yard.
Brian, no, you have to split out into a Brahoy.
Brahoy.
And Bryce gets Bahoy.
Works.
You know that on the new Tesla update, you can actually set the phone to an old phone icon to the old classic telephone icon, and it says ahoy hoy.
Oh, that's great. Like Mr. Burns.
Montgomery Burns. So, gentlemen, we had some interesting aerial phenomenon in California, actually visible, I think, all the way to Arizona last night.
Are you talking about the fact that for the first time SpaceX landed their booster rocket on the West Coast on land?
They not only, yes, they did that. And when it took off like at 7:21 p.m. And right as the sun was setting in the west, which meant that it helped illuminate the vapor trail behind the rocket. So you've got some amazing photographs and images of that rocket launch.
Holy cow. We're looking at a photo that Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti tweeted out of this. Yeah. And that's extraordinary. Is that, I'm tempted to believe that there are filters or something on this, but was it that impressive? Did you see it?
Well, I just sent Bryce some photos that were taken 5 miles from the launch site by yours truly on my iPhone. And you can see for yourself there what it looked like. And the short answer is, oh, my God. Holy cow. Amazing. I texted the friend the day before. I said, hey, you know, do you want to go to this? He says, it's a night launch. I don't know if we'll see much. And I'm like, yeah, only a giant bright ball of fire in the sky. He's like, yeah, right. And I'm like, never mind. And I'm like, cause like, I like night launches are actually, if you're close to it, I think are more impressive than day launches because the brightest object in the sky is the rocket. And so
it's like suddenly you have a second sun up in the sky. Well, and plus also, isn't it the fact that I've never seen this, so I'm going to need to lean on you to describe this for me, but there's all the, not debris, the exhaust that gets, mm-hmm. So it's like the sun goes down, so everything below, let's say 10, 15,000 feet is in dark, but then once this punches above it, all of those clouds and everything, suddenly they are being illuminated not just by the exhaust of the rocket, but also by the sun itself. So it, I assume it looks like an amazing spiral cloud or something.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you where I think the photos are probably a little bit large, which take a little moment to go through here. So you get there was a really amazing corkscrew pattern with the clouds of the exhaust plume of it. And then what happens, there were several phenomena going on. First, I was like pretty close to where this thing was taking off from. And then you saw the big, huge orange glow of the thing as it took off. And then next up was, you know, you watch this thing go further, further, further. And it felt like it was just going straight up over our heads. And then what happened was you eventually got the separation and the plume got illuminated by it. It was just, there was just a lot of things going on. It was just unexpected as far as how this was going to, you know, play out. And we watched that plume. It looked like a nova, you know, it looked like that or something, just to, you know, the way it was illuminated from behind. And
I assume a lot of that is because, you know, once you get beyond 1,000, 3,000, 5,000 feet, it's extremely difficult to perceive scale. Like, for all you know, it could have been an exploding star light years away at that point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was absolutely. And I, you know, the last time the two biggest aerial phenomena I've ever seen in my life are this and, you know, the eclipse. And this was, you know, but yeah, since the scale, certainly hard to tell. And you can understand, like, it, when you watched, when, and what's cool is where we were super clear. So we watched, we could see the fairings as they fell off, the fairings as they came off the upper stage, you know, for the satellite. Once it goes up into the layer, it's not worried about atmospheric interferences. We saw the fairings fall because they're getting hit by the sunlight. And as they fell and they spun, they would reflect the light of the sun. So we we could see the booster, the upper stage, and the fairings as they were falling. So we have a photo here, and I'll explain what we're looking at. The upper left corner, that's when the Thing rocket first launched, which looked like daylight, you know, as that thing launched right there. And I have a photo I took as the sun set, and it looks remarkably similar to that. So that was when it launched. Upper right is when it was taking off, and left was after we had a separation stages. And the one in the center is actually the one in the center, the photo to the left, but the big bright spot in the center is actually the upper stage as it keeps going towards space. And then way above it, that's actually the booster on its way doing its boost back. And that's probably like the cold gas, whatever, getting illuminated by the sun as it's doing its corrections before it does its reentry. And the one on the right is, this is well after the upper stage, you know, it's separated and it's doing its burn and it's keep going higher and higher and higher, you know, to a higher. So that's in space. That's well in space now. And you're looking at the exhaust plume illuminated by the sun.
Dude, that's amazing. Yep. It gives such a greater context. Like, you got to see in person the type of phenomenon three, 4 years ago here on the Weird Things podcast, we reported as a genuine mystery. Do you remember the Scandinavian spiral? Above the Norwegian sky, there was this weird spiral going back around, and it seemed improbable to say, oh, it's just a rocket that was spinning out of control. But yet, looking at those photos, it's like, yes, of course, that's exactly what that would look like if something spun out crazy. What do we see in here? Wow.
So, that's a spiral.
Yeah.
So from another point of view, you know, you're going to get that effect of it. It was absolutely stunning as far as we're all like, we had no idea this was going to be this beautiful. And then, of course, watching the rocket land again. So that was it coming back down again.
Wow.
And that's going on the other side of the hill over at Vandenberg Air Force Base. And then we're going to hear, like, you won't hear it here, but, like, we're watching. And then the sonic boom.
That's amazing. All right, well, let me ask you a question, because I think this would be on the short list for me. If you are going to go back and show just either one series of images or, you know, a short piece of video of what we have seen in the last 5 years to illustrate to somebody or to yourself 10 years ago, 15 years ago, hell, let's even go 20 years ago, just one series of pictures or clip of video that illustrates where we are in terms of our access to space, what would you show them?
Oh, I would show the thing that would blow the most minds would be the double booster landing at Canaveral.
Yeah, even more than the payload being delivered of a Tesla in space with a dummy, yeah, or possibly, I would like to believe, a foe of Elon Musk in space. Like, that synchronicity of those two, not just one thing, but two things doing what 5 years ago appeared totally impossible, man. Like that's one of those, we've talked about this before, like in the juggling world, you know, nobody ever has been able to juggle six balls at once. Somebody makes a YouTube video of them doing that. Within a week, three more videos have done it, because like the mere knowledge that something is possible shapes the amount of effort and attention people put into trying to achieve that thing.
The only thing that I would say to those images that we just saw, though, specifically like of like the mayor, is that like, there's something about that being over a cityscape that I think makes things like that just looks like a science fiction movie that like and it did not take off from like downtown Los Angeles. But it's certainly giving that idea of like, oh, no, wait, this is closer than it's ever really been to a reality that, that now we are in a phase of the bridge between us and space is now complete, if not highly trafficked.
I don't know what the history is of rocket launches over LA and weird photographs, but remember the Trident missile launch?
Sure. That looked crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and
right.
So and I'll say the thing, the strike against the double rocket booster landing is it looks like they look like models. And you'd have to explain the context that these things are 9-story tall buildings that are landing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why some of the footage, some of the other Canaveral footage is more striking visually when you watch the rocket land. But the Canaveral footage, you know, still is like, remember when they did the first Grasshopper testing? That Grasshopper was the test bed for the land, the booster technology. They did the first footage and it was over this pristine green field that looked like something out of Phantom Menace, you know, a CGI sort of environment. And there were people on YouTube saying that, SpaceX faking this. It's just PR. It's just fake. It's, you know, it's a Magic Leap demo.
Speaking of which, separately, I don't know that we've talked about this on Weird Things. And forgive me if I already brought it up. But I tweeted out like a week ago last Friday a quiz, an online quiz about whether or not you could detect the difference between a deep fake and a real photo, and Justin responded with a coy wink, but the article was phenomenal because it has this this binary thing. You go to increase. It's like a video game. So the title of it is I think this is what this is on Australian ABC.
ABC.net.au.
There you go. Can you tell a fake video from a real one? And it sets up like a video game a number of challenges here where it starts off very simple. Which one of these is real? Which one of these is fake? One of them is and so you have to vote whether you think Trump is fake or Obama is fake. And it turns out that Trump is a fusion of actual footage from the debates mixed with Alec Baldwin's face.
Yeah, that's weird. I was like, that looks like Alec Baldwin. Why aren't we?
Right, correct. But then they start giving you these interactive tools so that you could see, well, now we're blending
fakes and this is post fake.
And then it takes you a step farther. So, in fact, this will be fun to keep on going. So now here's two people you don't know. And it says, which one is fake, the left one or the right one? Also, the possibility are both fake or are neither fake. Like, what's your take on this one? Because I guess they're synchronized, which tells me that
one of them is based off of the other.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say one. The level of fakes are incredible. There is a problem in this testing, as far as I understand. The one on right looks fake to me, but we have a compression issue problem where now the way we do motion compression is that if you're looking for lag and other bits and things like that, it can be hard to tell because most of the video we watch now is fake to a degree and that it's averages or there's some algorithm deciding that this is what you're going to, you know, do. So, you know, I would say right, but I'd say like I would need better quality video to watch, you know, because I can't tell real video looks fake to me because of compression and, you know, the way they do stuff.
Well, and of course, the point of the article. So here we'll say the right one's fake just for grinsies here, in which case that's what most people say. Yeah. And then the actual answer is it says
the woman with the red T-shirt is a deep portrait, so it is correct. The right one is fake.
But then it gets a little bit more complicated as we're dealing with two copies of the exact same person, and then it gets more complicated beyond that. But then you weigh the fact that the video is, we have relied on video for the past 70 years to be the information vectored of standard to prove something. And now we live in an age where word of mouth can spread, you know, very, very quickly. And let's say if you knew that one of these was fake, yes, you would in an A-B test maybe be able to identify it. But would you instantly upon viewing it know it's so fake that you would hesitate to pass that along to your friends and create this poisonous information vector out there?
Oh no. And as a plot line that was in my book, Angel Killer, back from 2012, that was the modus. The thing I had was I had not to say I predicted the whole deep fake thing, but I did take a look at visual algorithms and realize that we were entering into a period of time when that was going to be a problem of the credibility gap. And so I had to kill, you know, a serial killer who used that to, you know, impersonate people because it was very easy to do that electronically. But I'll throw one out that's even that spooky. But imagine this, Brian. Your phone rings, and it's Justin Robert Young, says so in the caller ID. And there's Justin's voice.
I mean, why would I doubt that that's Justin?
Justin, Brian, I'm in a problem. My car just got totaled. I'm on vacation here. My rental car totaled. I don't have my credit cards. I'm in a problem. I need to get some money. The host of my Airbnb here says that, you know, you can deposit money in their PayPal account and they can help me out. I just need like $200. Can you help me out?
I mean, why wouldn't I do that outside of the fact that it's quite literally the plot of every text messaging phishing scam on Facebook?
He's talking to you on the phone.
Sure. I mean, you're right. I mean, that level of fidelity would totally subvert my natural caution in that kind of situation.
Wow. So are we at a point now where I'm going to be calling for the rest of our lives are going to be us picking up phone calls from each other explaining that our limited window for healthcare enrollment has been extended?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Even if it just keeps you on the phone for three extra seconds, and statistically they can prove that, yeah, you won't necessarily think that it's me telling you this, but it'll just your physiological response. Our friendship will keep you on the phone for longer than if it were just a regular recording.
Well, and think about this. Imagine you are 23 years old. You're starting at a workaday job. You have, let's say, 150 to 500 contacts in your total social media profile. And a company reaches out to you saying, hey, don't know if you're just totally set and have all the money that you want, but we're willing to give you $500 a month for the loan of your voice. We'll never claim that it's you. We will only use your vocal profile to run these ads that will be customized. And maybe it doesn't even show up in a phone call. Maybe they use your voice, Justin Robert Young, on a Pandora profile to all of your friends. It's like, we know which of your friends listen to Pandora and which have ads enabled. And we think that the use of your voice will cause them to engage just a little bit more as we talk about the benefits of upgrading to Pandora Pro or whatever. Then at that point, where's the moral middle ground on that? Is that
Brian, you described a very moral case of it where they at least went and paid you for permission to do that, where, you know, hey, there's a lot of YouTube videos and podcasts, and, you know, and that's, you know, the problem we had with Facebook was, hey, we need your phone number for security reasons. It's just for security reasons. And, you know, anybody in your access in your phone book, by the way, is now, and it turned out it wasn't for security. It was also used for advertising so that they could track in people who bought stuff. Even if you're not a Facebook subscriber, whatever, they use that. So they use the phone number for advertising purposes, and they're not, you know, Google and Facebook are not very transparent about what they do these things. They've got all this audio and video of this now. So.
We made a joke about a version of this 5 years ago at Dragon Con during our live NSFW show about how a lot of people, you know, have services like Spotify and Pandora that you turn on sexy music when you want to have sexy time with a loved one. But the idea of being in the middle of sexy time and all of a sudden I just hear the voice of clearly Justin Robert Young saying like, hey, it's your old pal. Listen, I know that you may not think that it's worth it to get Pandora Pro, but I guarantee you it is. Listen up, ladies and germs.
You keep naming actually good advertisements and moral arrangements. If you are in the middle of sexy time and you don't have Pandora Pro, then you really should upgrade. Like, that's a mood killer. You don't need to have, you know, some for-profit university in the middle of your, you know, vinegar strokes.
I mean, that's what I'm saying, man.
So I think that that's the best case scenario. My genuine fear is, we've talked about this before, Adobe has Vocode, which is the software that does voice. It's basically deep fakes for voice, takes small samples of voice, it can do it. We are going to see, in the age we're in, we're going to see sooner or later, we're going to find out somebody's getting spoofed. And, you know, there's the intelligence problem of, like, you know, intelligence agencies, government agencies. And I mentioned the phone thing because I right now can spoof Justin's phone number and call you, Brian. I can spoof you with this phone number and do that. Phone numbers aren't secure. They're bogus. You know, we have a friend of a friend that just got a scam call from the local police station saying that they were going to be arrested unless they paid some immigration tax or something, you know. And it looked legit because it came from the police station, you know, but it was a spoofed number. So the phone companies have not made it very easy to spoof numbers. So I've done that before as pranks where I've used somebody else's phone number, you know, you spoof somebody else's number so they get, oh, it's my friend so-and-so calling. No, it's not. And then, but with the vocode, with the voice thing, you could you think about like in this era of sting journalism and blogging and how gotcha sort of ism is like, you know, I got so-and-so on the phone and pretended to be his attorney, you know, and someone, you know, anonymous, you know, gets on the phone as an attorney and divulges stuff. It's scary.
Yeah, we've touched on some of this. What I'm hoping will happen is, so think of these possibilities as pathogens that right now have historically, let's say we're making up all the numbers here, have only been possible and used at high-level espionage, governmental intrusion attempts for the last 10, 15, 20 years or whatever. And now, like other pathogens, they're multiplying and they're becoming more available. Other people are getting the same idea. I would like to believe that the antibodies of good best practices of caution and habit and understanding, you know, like there are a lot of things to be upset about over the last 3 years, I would say fairly undeniable that 3 years ago we as a society were less even aware of the concept of fake news, much less had a built-in skepticism of it, you know, like, hey, is what I'm reading from a trusted source? And we had talked about how, you know, institutions like PolitiFact are essentially stepping in. Now, granted, you know, in all of the analogs, whether it's Snopes, whether it's PolitiFact or whatever, there are going to be these antigens that step in to fill the niche for the desire to know that the information you're feeding yourself is healthy or at least as close to true as you believe.
I come from a different point of view because those institutions have their own they're better than nothing, but they have their own implicit biases, and that's become a problem.
Correct.
Is because it's sort of the Wikipedia problem on a smaller scale. Wikipedia, we're aware of the problems, it's so big, and you see areas where certain people in charge of certain sections and pages have explicit biases. Those institutions have biases. You know, we're all going to have biases. And we've talked about before, the idea is to disclose your biases, and then I trust you a bit more. But I think that, yeah, we're going to get some antidotes. But, like, I mean, spam was easy to solve technically from an AI point of view because it's repetition. It targets some people. But there are still billions of dollars of victims every year from spam phishing. The last election was affected by a phishing attempt that affected – you know, a person who was in charge of part of our intelligence apparatus previously in a previous administration. I mean, that's a thing to think about. Somebody who is in charge of large parts of our defense and military and whatever previously got phished. And we don't know how many times this happens without that happening. So there, I never pick up my phone now if I don't recognize who the caller is. I never pick up my phone now because it's gotten so bad that we have not seen, you know, an adequate, you know, antigen for that yet. And that's frustrating to me, is it's like, yeah, there will be some, but I think there's a rate at which some areas we get outpaced. And, you know, when the biggest, smartest algorithms belong to marketing companies.
I do think that much in the same way that 10 years ago you could say, oh, well, Photoshop technology will make us never believe a photo again. We got more sophisticated with Photoshop, and not only that, but figured, you know, there are ways that we can see whether or not a Photoshop is Photoshop. People who have used the program that, you know, have gotten more aware of it. I do think that we will continue to become more sophisticated in understanding, you know, some of these the deepfake technologies and the vocoders. But what I think is the larger point is that I don't think we're far away now. As, you know, telephone communication continues to become a little less used and therefore a little bit more lawless. Like, I've gotten more scam calls in the last 2 years than I did probably the previous 10. I do think that we're going to see Brian, like, you know, you probably more than me and Andrew not far behind, the idea that celebrity, like targeted celebrity, if you can't get somebody's best friend, if that kind of data targeting is too hard, certainly you can find people that are known in the demo. You can find people who sound like somebody that you know that these people listen to or is a known person a pre-recorded phone call or a robocall
and I could totally imagine let's say Voco technology is everywhere. Then what you do is you get a profile, you figure out through whatever nefarious means how many fans of the Weird Things podcast there are. Then you figure out all their phone numbers. Then you call and you begin with a pre-written vignette in three voices saying like, hey, oh man, this is weird. Do I just begin? Yeah, no, that's how you begin. Hey, it's me, Brian. And you're like, it's Andrew. It's Justin. Listen, we just wanted to talk to you. And I know this is weird, but of course we host the Weird Things podcast about the new opportunities that the Obama administration has made possible on healthcare, whatever.
We are elected in 2020 now.
exactly. But my point is, like, just from an advertising perspective, just that brief moment of confusion is so valuable to get people emotionally invested in the rest of the scam sales call I hesitate to even think. And here's the other part. The only reason we're not seeing that is because right now it's human beings that have to invest human being artistic efforts and so on. When we get to a place where the AIs are not even as smart as humans, 80% of the way there or whatever, you could say, hey, identify every podcast, identify their audience, figure out their phone number, write a script that clumsily gets this idea apart, make it sound like it's the host of their podcast, start calling them and do it all. Like, I mean,
Brian, back up. Okay. Let's take your, let's say we do vocode of President Obama. Okay. And we get a list of DNC supporters, which we have, and we have our, you know, we have somebody on that could just be somebody we're paying in Sri Lanka to do the voice because it's going to be put into, made it sound like him. And we have him cold calling people like, hey, this is Obama. I'm actually working
doing
the phone
it live. Yeah.
Here. Yeah. I'm working the phone room here helping to raise money for so-and-so, you know, and like, oh, it's really me. How are you doing? You know,
which we already have a version of where you can,
but it's
tell.
Not really DNC. It's the money. So I'm saying going to somewhere else.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. But we already have that now because you'll get these weird hybrid robocalls where it's not mm-hmm. them just playing a tape, but instead it's clear that somebody is sitting in front of a soundboard and they have, they have, you know, 27 different responses they can click. And we've talked before about how, you know, how socially awkward it is to immediately go into a Turing test and, you know, and they even have buttons on the soundboard that are designed to assuage your fears like, oh, no, don't worry. I'm definitely a human being. I just need this technology in order to communicate effectively with you, making it sound vaguely like it's somebody overcoming a handicap and that to assure you that everything is on the up and up.
Wow, yeah, so, I think that we are, I would not be shocked if by the next by the 2020 election cycle we don't get really nasty robocalls for people with, you know, just illegally using their voices, because a lot of the times, you know, robocalls now are ugly and bad oftentimes that are spreading malicious and false rumors about people, and no one ever really finds out where they came from, right? But so why not, if you're already there, why not say like, hi, I'm taking a poll. Have you heard the new leaked audio about candidate X? And it's candidate X's voice screaming some awful thing.
I'm sure that could be an issue. I'm just kind of more concerned about like the people who are the most vulnerable. Like, because, you know, you brought up, you know, using somebody who is beloved by a lot of people who says, hey, I need what sounds innocuous, like, oh, we just need a $10 donation to something that's not the you know, institution people think it's going to. You know, all we need is this, but we'll make it easy. I'm going to put you over to so-and-so and you can just handle, we'll do it direct from your bank account. And you give them all the information because it's like, I got a call from Bob. I made a campaign contribution, you know, and it's like, no. And that's my fear. Now I have one of the solutions I think we're going to see happen. And I think it's going to happen. Like I showed you before on the Apple, like on the iPhone, how it had the face scanner tech, and that's, and other phones are developing, you know, have this too. And based upon the Kinect technology that Microsoft was the first one to use, which projects all the dots over your face. This is amazing because this thing sees in the dark. Like you pull out the iPhone and the iPhone 10, you aim at your face in the dark and you use like one of the developer things. You can see a 3D map and everything, even though it's dark. That'll be part of it because I think we're going to start moving towards away from telephone phone calls, and there's going to be, you're going to have secure Google calls or secure, you know, FaceTime. There's going to be a version where I'm like, I'm only going to accept this call if it's coming from, I know that device, it's coming from a device that belongs to my friend, and I know that they unlocked it, and maybe even real-time video, I know that it's actually doing the 3D point scan, and it's being something that's, yes, there are ways to spoof that, but it's really, really hard once it starts from an encrypted device that says, this is the data, and it's from end to end. I think we're going to get to that. I think that's going to be kind of where things are going to go, is that you're going to use real-time authentication.
I'm with you, because at this point, the telephone is corrupted tech for me.
Yeah.
Like if I had reasonable assurances that my phone number could be routed through some other authenticating system, even for people that, like, if I'm calling out and I need people, I'm like leaving my phone number on people's voice, you know, answering machine, that there was some way to authenticate that, like, okay, well, this is that new caller coming in or whatever, I would use that in a heartbeat, because as it is right now, that pie chart of useful phone calls to non-useful phone calls is getting, that useful phone call slice is getting thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner. And oftentimes it's also just frustrating. Like it makes me angry to pick up the phone. If, like, when I was calling around trying to get the contender in the presidential libraries, I just had now all these, you know, places that I could be half expecting a phone call from, and I would get a phone call, and then it would be, you know, my limited window for healthcare enrollment, you know, in some awful robocall, and it was just bad. It was so awful.
Here's the part that is scary to me. There's plenty to be scared of, but the think of how quickly we all adjusted once we figured out that the spammers and scammers had figured out that if they did the first 6 digits of your phone number, you would be likely to believe this is one of your neighbors calling you. Now, we perceive that as a red flag of like, don't answer the call. There's a 0% chance it's them. But what happens the first time, the second time, the 12th time I get a call from Justin Robert Young and it's definitely not Justin Robert Young, or it takes a weird Turing test to figure out whether or not it's Justin Robert Young. Very quickly, I just full on, I would imagine that I just stop answering the phone the way I do with the other stuff, right? Like, what else do you do?
Yeah, I mean, if they can engage and they can be as funny as Justin and they call more often, you know, okay.
Oh, okay, this is the crazy part. Imagine this. Imagine the AI robots or the scammers get so good and so interesting that they actively contribute to my life, where it's like, maybe they realize that they have to invest 45 minutes of just saying like, hey man, just calling to find out how's it going. Oh, that's great. Oh my God. And you're working on what next? Oh, that's awesome. Man, I sure do value our friendship. Bye. I'll call you again in an hour.
Bye, friendship. Can I have pizza money? Yeah, sure. Been mowing it to you now. I get it. I know what's going on here, but that's okay. It's like grandma. You know, grandma's like bribing kids, you know, like, here's $5, you know, for seeing grandma.
Oh.
In the tone of that, Eric Berger, who's been doing some great reporting on space at Ars Technica, he's one of my favorite space reporters. You know, there's some great people doing that beat now, like Emily Calandrelli, Lauren Grush. I mean, they do some just really good stuff. I mean, I think they're just covering this sort of new era pretty well. He had a very interesting article about there is this weird thing that, you know, again, this is more on the SpaceX thread, and, you know, says the guy wearing the SpaceX t-shirt. Every now and then you get these editorials that pop up that are, you know, very critical of SpaceX. And again, Elon Musk, SpaceX, all that, public institutions doing public, they need to be scrutinized, you know, and we want to be very careful about this. Scrutiny is important. Just because we like something or we like it, it's not like, well, leave them alone. No. Ask questions, scrutinize these things. That's part of the game, and we need to have that. Nobody's above that. But there have been some editorials and stuff that were like sharply critical of certain kind of mundane things, like the load and go procedure. That's the procedure where SpaceX would have have like the payload onto the craft, and then they would go ahead and load the fuel and afterwards or whatever. And, you know, there was an incident where they had the explosion on the launch pad, and that was, you know, related to load and go, but also had to do with some other defect or thing there. But that's a procedure that SpaceX does, but allows them to quickly unload the fuel, load the fuel, whatever. It's actually saves time, saves money, whatever. NASA signed off on it, is okay with it, but there were these campaigns that came out, like these editorials in places like Texas, Florida, and Alabama, which are where your senators who control a lot of the funding for space come from, and they're super highly critical of load and go. And I think Berger and some others decided to dig in and say, what's the source of these editorials? And they tracked down one of the guys whose name was on there, and he said that he didn't actually it was bylined by a retired spacecraft operator, Richard Hager, who worked for NASA in Apollo. And then, you know, it gets a little bit murky there, and you find out that these were all placed by a firm that develops and executes public and Hill and agency funding advocacy campaigns to shift the narrative. And so their featured funders are like Boeing, for example. Okay. And now what it appears to be is that these were firms that were funded like by Boeing, competitors to SpaceX, that were using the name of or hiring people who have credible sounding roles to write editorials to criticize SpaceX. And these things were not divulged in the editorials, and the newspapers have been running these editorials. They get an editorial, this former Apollo guy.
Can we go back to that screen? Go back to that screen. So here's the featured case studies. All right. So you have Boeing and Comcast are the only two company names that I think you would immediately know. The rest of them are all of these. What I am going to assume to be that the rest of the companies that are behind working with this company don't want their names on any of this. So it's the future of TV. Go back to the weird music first. Export import banks of the or Bank of the United States, Aerospace Industries Association, the Center for Copyright Information, the Alliance for Diversity and Programming, which are all, I'm sure, just consortiums of. Yes. Industries that want, you know, to change the narrative but don't want their names on things.
So in the case of this, Ars Technica reached out to, you know, first to find out the source of this, and they find out they're placed by they found out they're placed by this firm, and the firm wouldn't divulge who sponsored it. Then they went to Boeing, like, hey, did you pay for this? And Boeing said, we have no comment.
Huh. This is like a weaponized version of everything in Ryan Holiday's book, Trust Me, I'm Lying, where and I'm not going to say there's anything innocuous about the techniques that he discusses in Trust Me, I'm Lying, but he talks about the practice of trading up the chain, starting with the least reliable blogs who desperately need content 24/7, then writing under multiple assumed names to the local news affiliate saying, hey, did you see this? And somebody who needs to make 6 to 8 blog posts per day says, well, it's, you know, so-and-so is reporting. Now you have an NBC affiliate and you're able to reach out to Gizmodos and Engadgets out there. And then once they report it, now all of a sudden you're on Wall Street Journals and so on. In this case, this is all to sell tickets to the movie I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, or, you know, to sell American Apparel. But now it's like, you know, you're dealing with big enough dollars that it makes sense to just carve out a cool billion to play that game to make sure that Boeing keeps a lucrative ULA contract.
Well, the astroturfing goes way back, and I mean, in here,
that is the rule, but that is not the exception. I mean, like, as messy and ugly as our media landscape is right now, at least to do that in a post-blog revolution world, you had to play eight. I mean, like, that was like you had to win the game of chess against eight chess masters by playing them all against each other, right? At least there was a clever chain that you had to complete instead of literally just calling somebody and saying, hey, remember when we went to Yale together? Anyway, these kids, stop. We need to run this editorial. And people being like, sure, you seem like a real friend to me forever.
Well, in the case of like LMGI, they don't have to go up the chain. They already can place it in the major newspapers. They can just say, hey, we'll go get this person who has a credible name that we can likely place an op-ed piece with. And boom, it's there. And then it trickles down. And then everybody covers this because, you know, they've got, hey, this person, we can buy a credible name. We can buy credibility there that's likely to get placement op-ed because our clients have the money. And then, and that's everything you read came because somebody either decided they wanted to report it or somebody wanted to tell a reporter. And you have to think everything goes through that lens. And whether it's from scientific research where it's universities saying, hey, we're going to talk about this thing in our lab because, and there's an audience for it. We aren't always the audience. The audience for this stuff is partially constituents, but it's the senators and stuff in these states because Boeing is fiercely competitive with SpaceX and is very, very threatened by what's going on there. And so for them, and this is old hat for them, it's, you know, to do these sort of things. It's not a new trick that they discovered of like, hey, we can buy narratives to try to influence. And this is part of the, you know, this is the military industrial complex. I'm sure it goes all the way down to, you know, back in ancient Rome where somebody's playing, you know, the news crier, you know, to like, hey, was there a chariot accident with Claudius Romanus's chariots? Why don't you point that out today? You know, you know, Senator Pepperstein's daughter fell from a chariot because of a faulty wheel from so-and-so's chariot.
I totally think you always need to understand where your stuff is coming from, where your news is coming from. And I think that anytime, and this is even from inside journalism, the most ashamed I've ever been in my short journalism career was when I was so sure about a narrative that I didn't do my due diligence, that I didn't think any more about it, that I didn't check that extra, like, yeah, it's 99.999% probably this. And that's really, in terms of value, the best education I got from editors, good editors, were like, no, it can never just be 99.999%. Like, either you have it dead to rights, or you work harder, or you let it go. Like that's the hardest part when you were trying to kind of get stuff out there. Now, when you get into the opinion section of newspapers, like or media in general, that's really where I think things are the most interesting, because when you look at, like, now I'm fascinated with the subreddit r/politics, because there's this very fun, interesting thing that is happening, and fun and interesting, you can probably take it your own, mileage may vary, but they made the decision as a board to say, we are not going to let people posting change the headlines on when you post an article. So you're not allowed to post memes, not allowed to post whatever, you're only allowed to post headlines. And we are going to whitelist the sites that you are allowed to post from, right? And so what's happened is the things that get the most traffic are the headlines that are written like somebody who's trying to write a salacious headline on Reddit. Right. So you're really only self-selecting opinion articles and stuff like that. And that doesn't happen all the time. But if as somebody who follows this kind of stuff, very often it is the most inflammatory headlines that get the biggest traffic. And similarly, it is the most inflammatory headlines that are 90% opinion pieces that are people writing op-eds. There is a reason why when you go to top 10 or most traffic stories on even more supposedly staid and sober outlets like the Wall Street Journal, or the Washington Post, or the New York Times, that very often it's the opinion pieces that are getting the most traffic because it is the salacious and pointed that will always get our attention. And that's where, if there is a recontextualization of information, like we do need to kind of start draw lines. And I do think that partly, hey, did you write this? Can you please make sure that you disclose if you got paid by somebody to put your name or you slightly rewrote this editorial? Like, that needs to be something policed by newspapers or by media outlets in general, because you are always trading on your credibility. There are two things that will always trade on your credibility as a media organization: opinion pieces and unnamed sources. No matter what, they might get you attention. People might like them. They might engage with them, but understand that they are always black magic. Well, and if you do not balance it out, then you will get your esteem will erode.
Well, we're seeing that right now. I think it was Business Insider that had the story about, or Bloomberg, the Bloomberg's big hack. The Bloomberg thing, their whole story about the Apple and Google, their servers had been hacked with these chips, right?
Yeah.
And that story, everybody denies it. And even Apple, and I give credibility when Apple certain denies stuff, because Apple's famously said to the government, no, we're not going to do this. They have no problem drawing a line in the sand as far as what they will and will not do. And they've been very clear about, we'll disclose what we can, whatever. And if they can't say anything, they generally don't say anything. So the idea that Apple's lying about this, I don't put much credibility to. I think they have higher credibility in these areas than other things. I'm not going to say they are about their battery life and a lot of other things, but everybody says this story is just flat out not true. But Bloomberg stands by because we have nine insiders tell us this. But one of the problems that happens is, and this is what we counted this when I worked for the James Randi Foundation, is we'd have these account stories like, there are 12 witnesses to this. There are 12 witnesses. No, we found out one guy saw it and he told 11 other people. You know, and there are 11 people who heard this guy's story that were then, that people like, oh, 12 people have told people said they say, they saw the same thing. Or here it's like, we have nine sources. This, like, is it nine insider sources who say these servers were hacked by the, Chinese, government that heard one person say this story? Is that the case? Because that often happens a lot where, hey, we have five people all say this is true. It's like, yeah, five people believe this one person. And that's a thing our brains don't process.
Yeah, I will say that this is a very interesting story, and I highly recommend people read more into it, because the sourcing that Bloomberg says is nine sources that also spread between somebody involved in U.S. federal law enforcement, Apple, and Amazon. Now, Apple, Amazon, and the U.S. Justice Department now say that it's not true.
Yeah.
And for the record, the story here is that what is it? Supermicro? Who's the?
Yeah, Supermicro.
So Supermicro is a motherboard manufacturer that, in their infinite scaling, they had to subcontract out from their main Chinese factories to smaller Chinese factories, and that the People's Liberation Army got them by way of either graft or intimidation to place a small chip on their motherboards that would allow somebody to access not only that board, but also whole server farms that were apparently found in Amazon and Apple, as well as other organizations. Now, that is the story. Almost immediately, and even included in the story, were rebuttals from Apple and Amazon. When we covered this on DTNS last week, was trying to find where the statements, the initial statements in the story, could be wiggly. But since then, not only have they come out with further, more full-throated rebuttals, but also, the U.S. Justice Department has said so. So it's like, this is a fascinating story, because it didn't look like a very wobbly story from Bloomberg's perspective. They certainly put a lot of time and effort into it, which would suggest that this was something that was cleared from the highest levels of Bloomberg's news organization. But normally you don't get these kinds of, like, this kind of pushback. If it was something where, let me be clear, Apple or Amazon would not be looked at as doing anything wrong. It would be they had gotten, that they were a part of a very sophisticated supply chain of issue with the Chinese government. This would not be them being insecure necessarily. This would be a gigantic operation that had reached a conclusion. So it's curious. I would encourage everybody to follow along with it because it is very, very interesting.
I believe every part of it is possible. Every part of what I read sounded extremely compelling, but then the way, and like you said, like, yeah, the denials were not the Weasley sort of like Google or Facebook ones where you're like, oh, they didn't. They made a very careful rebuttal to it. I understand like that nine people from nine different areas, but like all it takes is one security conference where DHS, is at, and some Apple security people and one other person, and somebody does it, they have their private conferences going all the time, and somebody does a session to say like, hey, this is a concern, we think we may have found this, or this is a thing, or I heard this thing, or whatever, and you have people in multiple different organizations like, yeah, we heard about this, da da da, and that's where it can, come out from. So maybe it did happen, and they're just don't want to admit. I don't know, but. You know what's not fake news?
Patreon.com/weirdthings, Andrew.
No, we are kind of fake news.
Yeah.
But we're trying hard not to be.
Man, if you've gotten value out of that, part of the reason we're able to bring you these discussions is because we're loud, live, and independent, and that's all because of you, beautiful patrons. $26. That's all we want. Just $26 per episode. Let us get to that eternal sustainability goal at $26 per episode. So if you have a buck, if you think the show's worth a buck, if this was a vending machine and you would have bought it for a buck, we would like that buck. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Please, we need your support. It's what keeps us through the day. I look forward to this. I always look forward to this. It's my fun part. On the subject of not knowing the source of calls, did you hear about the Hawaiian hospital where people were getting calls from there and they couldn't understand who was calling? Like lots and lots and lots of people. Quote, billions of people, not gazillions of people, but like tons and tons of people were reporting, hey, we're getting calls, we're getting calls, we're getting calls from the hospital. And there are a lot of theories. Could it have been the deceased reaching out? Could it have been something going on? Why are all these calls coming from there?
Why not? Seems legit. Case closed. We got him. Book him, Dano. It's Hawaii Hospital O.
H-O.
Yeah, there you go. explain to me what you mean when you say they couldn't understand them. Were they talking gibberish or nonsense or like
nothing? Just silence. They'd pick up the phone in silence.
Oh, well, that would be creepy.
Yeah. And they keep people like they keep getting calls like they're coming from the hospital. They're coming from the hospital. So they tried to call the Hawaiian Telecom to find out if they had some kind of technical fault with the lines. When I hear Hawaiian Telecom, I first imagine Gilligan with a couple of coconuts. It's more sophisticated than that, guys. The professor put some copper wires in there too.
I'm gonna hope that this isn't just a straight up scam thing because of like to drum up life insurance sales or something just to make people feel like,
oh my god, wait a minute, that you would just like imbue the haunting specter of death in somebody.
Just get everyone thinking about it.
What if that's the future of spam calls? Is like you have a leader call that literally just inspires some kind of terror in you, right?
Or maybe it's just somebody calling and saying,
"There's the cure."
Yes, or somebody's like, "Man, real bummer. My uncle died." And you're like, "Oh my god, I'm sorry. Who are you?" And you're like, "I'm sorry. I'm just really broken up. You know what? This is probably a wrong number. I'm thinking so hard about death and how it's inevitable, and I'm just thinking about what I'm gonna leave for my family. I gotta go. I gotta go. Click."
Click, right?
Separate mode of communication.
Yeah, yeah, the next day it's did you know that life insurance has never been more affordable?
Yes. God, we're in the wrong business, gentlemen. Clearly we're an idea factory here.
So the hospital director decided to figure out what's going on, because people are like, and like, again, like telecom companies are like, no, it's not us. And then so like a call's going out, like one moment, like a call like went out right at that moment. She looks at the phone she's at. No call coming from there. So she goes around the hospital, looks at a small hospital, and then a little detail. And it's not it's an animal hospital, and no, it's not one of the animals they had there got loose. It's not that. Okay. She looks around and she goes in into the other phone room, sees the other phone place to see if anybody's there. There's nobody there. But then she gets close.
You promise.
It's a monkey making calls, isn't it?
Or a snake.
It's not an animal from the hospital.
It's a monkey was pretending to be a doctor.
Is it?
Yes. Dr. Monkey this week on Fox. Watch the premiere.
I would love to believe Monkey. It's a doctor pretending to be a monkey, the reverse of that. But
actually, it was. She looks over onto the phone pad where they have the LCD, like, you know, the touchscreen phone pad, and she sees a gecko that had gotten in from outside.
Oh, my God.
And Gecko was on the phone and was just randomly dialing people trying to sell them insurance.
That's amazing. The original Geico Gecko.
Yes.
That is hilarious.
That is hilarious. I would imagine if Geico could, if they could do so without fear of their names being, or without being caught, I would imagine that's the kind of story you would pay someone under the table to tell on social media.
Yes. There's that. And warning, it's October now, and we're going to hear, you're going to get a lot of fake stories of ghosts and stuff because of haunted houses and pub crawls and stuff. Just know that you'll hear something, it'll be a funny, cool, whatever story, and realize, oh, it's planted. It's this.
Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah. Do you guys have any picks?
Yeah, I got picks.
I do. So I went to Ohio over the weekend to go to a wedding and to visit my wife's family. We decided to get my father-in-law had a stent put in. And so we're getting him for an early Christmas / birthday present, the new Apple Watch with the EKG thing, just because you know, it's good peace of mind, and he was very excited to have it. But it also means that he needed a Apple phone to get the most out of it. So when we were there, we were going to go get him an Apple phone. We went to the Apple store. And then, you know, we got to thinking, like, you know, we could give him a new phone. You know, but I have the 10. It's certainly more than enough for him to use the watch. So what if I just gave him mine and I got the new XS Max?
That's evil. That's so altruistic of you. That's amazing.
You got more of her products.
Yeah, I got the new phone when I said I wasn't going to get the new phone. I have the new phone. It's a great phone. It's really good. It's got a great camera. It's really fast. And Face ID is about 70% better.
Is it is it bigger or smaller than the old Plus?
It's very comparable.
It's the same size as the 10. Or did you get the 10S Max?
I got the Max.
Oh, okay. So that's bigger than the Plus.
Bigger than the Plus?
But
the screen is bigger than the Plus, but the actual phone itself is bigger?
I think a little bit.
Huh.
It had the same feeling of like, oh, my fingers don't reach as far as they did before. But man, I did miss the larger screen. The larger screen is just like, I forgot how much I enjoyed it being able to just kind of have more end-to-end video and Hearthstone and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, the size thing, it's bigger than I remember. It lasted a day, and now it's like, you know, adapted. And I'm very, very,
so,
very
so
happy.
So both of you guys give the thumbs up. This is the first generation I've deliberated this long I mean, it's been automatic for 12 years.
You were hemming and hawing last year too about the 10.
Yeah, but then I definitely got it. But now it's out and I could go get it if I wanted it. But and in fact, I have a pressing need because my daughter's phone's crapping out and I have an excuse to give her this one. And yet, I don't know. It's if I'm hearing two thumbs ups from you two gentlemen.
I was gonna say literally like you're like hey, it's been this long, like as Brian on air talks himself into going and
like it's only right been after. Out a month, not even a month.
That's far and away the longest. Like no, it has been automatic first day every generation. even the 10, I think I got the day it came out, or maybe.
No. We both ordered it because we both had the same story of AT&T auto pay being stupid as we were trying to pre-order it.
Yeah.
No, I was gonna skip this one and just go with the next version. This opportunity was here, so it was just easy to do. But I'll say this: look, it's a great phone. It's really nice to be able to have a new phone to basically continue to move the leading edge of all the tech that comes along with it. Like, that's ultimately what you're really buying by living this ridiculous lifestyle.
I remember all the way back when Bonnie and I got married, I had to explain to her, like, look, I belong to a country club and the dues are $2,000 a year. And it's called the always buying the fastest computer shit ever country club. And, and if it's a problem, then we need to really talk through our marriage now. And sure enough, like, that has pivoted. It's gone from desktops to laptops. And now that $2,000 a year due goes to, phone crap. But I've always been a member of that crowd as long as I could afford to do so.
And I got on the new monthly.
The forever plan.
So now I'm just going to get the new phone. Now I'm not going to worry about
all right,
it.
So yeah.
Phone and
that's right. Like I skipped, I think like it was like the 7S because I'm like, man, like they because there was that was point. I'm like, I don't know that I'll appreciably. There wasn't that appreciable difference for me. I skipped that, but like I've done every one in this and yeah, I do the monthly plan and like yeah, and it's like if you're happy with your phone, keep your phone. You know, I mean, like, and that's the thing is people like go like, oh, I'm wondering like if you're really really. Not even on the fence, on the other side of the fence, looking over, trying to find out what's over there. The phone you have is going to be good for, at least 16 months, don't feel pressured to have to do that if it's doing what you need it to do. You know, the phones have got a little bit like, that a phone now, if you buy something today, you're probably going to get 3 years of pretty good utility out of it. And then the software updates, whether you're on Google or whatever. Then it'll start to get, deteriorate. But after that, like, don't feel pressure, kids.
They're powerful chips in here. Like there was a benchmark that came out last week, I think, that was like, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but the new chip in the new iPhone is very comparable to desktop,
feels like it, man.
Or like, yeah, like decent desktop computer.
Well, and comparing an Apple phone to the speed of Apple desktops right now is not really fair,
not desktop, but like specifically.
I just making a slam against how Apple's been slow to update their,
look, Brian, the thing is, whether or not you get the new phone, you've already benefited by Bryce having the new phone and just taking awesome pictures of you while you're shooting Modern Rogue stuff.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It looked great. And I was like, you're right. I should. Okay, fine. You've convinced me. You know what? And here's a genuine thought I had is I need a new pair of earbuds anyway. So my pick is.
Wait a minute! What happened? What happened to
did
your?
You, both,
you don't have the, you don't have the dog shock collar on.
Oh yet. No! I still have these, but there are times where for audio quality and
I'm like. For a moment, I'm like, man, this Modern Rogue bit sounds interesting.
No,
the dog shot collar. I'm like, wow.
We almost did that once.
Yes, we did.
For night attack.
But there is a time and a place for like the regular earbuds happen to fit in my ears nicely, and I'm able to have a situational awareness to where you can hear, you know, I do, there are times I like shutting out the worlds with the noise canceling Bose stuff. And especially now that the new version apparently doesn't sound like hot garbage when I talk to people, I'm wearing that more. But at some point I lost my other set of earbuds, and so, you know, I could either spend $40
bunch of those,
or so my pick is a pick that I've done before, but the nice thing about this pick is that they have so many different stories. I mentioned a while ago that I discovered the podcast Business Wars, and now it's fun because, like, I'll see a new story come in, and I'll say, I'll get to you when the entire thing is there. And so I waited, you know, a few months later, and it's like, oh, good. Now all of Southwest versus American Airlines is out, all seven episodes. I just finished today Marvel versus DC. And, of course, Coke versus Pepsi was great, Nintendo versus PlayStation. And I believe they did a different one, PlayStation versus Xbox, as like a follow-up of it. It's just great. It's by the numbers, there's a little, you know, there's two ad breaks per episode with two or three ads per episode. But like, I'm excited to go back to Hearst versus Pulitzer and some of the classic stories that they do. And it's fantastic. They make sure to do a disclaimer at the end. Like, rather than just tell the story, they do simplified what you would imagine the dialogue might have sounded like. And it's all one guy, you know, and he's in your left ear saying, like, well, it's me, Stan Lee. I don't like DC. And it's like, it's me, the artist that leaves, and Ditko, or I don't know, the other one. Anyway, that's a good representation of it.
Jonathan, other one.
His name? The guy who did all the art for Marvel and never got recognized for it. Anyway,
that one.
It's great. It's great. Somebody's screaming at home. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it's a good podcast. You should listen to it.
Cool. I have been watching. I had been watching a lot of The Great British Bake Off because it's on Netflix now. But that reminded me of how much, A, I just like cooking shows, but also competition reality shows. And there have been a lot of, especially cooking shows, kind of coming out. Netflix itself has a ton of them. But either this year or last year, I really liked Nailed It on Netflix, which is like really low stakes, and so that's really fun. It's cool, but it seems like a lot of them have been kind of like that, very like easy breezy, fun shows. And so I really kind of wanted to go to the other side, and Hulu has the whole back catalog of Top Chef. And so I went back to season one of Top Chef, and wow, is that very, very, very early days of reality competition shows, especially for food shows, right? Like, this is a show that did not do like dedicated photography of the foods after they were done cooking. They would just take clips, whatever footage, whatever coverage that they had, and they would just slow it down so that it could cover whatever the long period it needed to be, so you'd see the frame skipping. Is in 4:3. There's a lot of it that they have to subtitle because the audio is not like right. But it's still a very dramatic show, and it's sometimes you really want high stakes, and Top Chef has it, you know, in terms of like high level of skill and tension with the deadlines. So there's like 14 seasons or something like that on Hulu. It's been going for a while now, and it's a really good show. Top Chef.
Jack Kirby, that's who it was.
He's the Top Chef.
He's Top Chef.
I have a couple picks. First off is my Simon and Kirby.
There it is.
Science fiction. I was biting my tongue, Brian.
Yeah.
Horror collection. Jack Kirby, he was with Marvel for a number of years, created some seminal Marvel characters, had a little bit of falling out with Stan Lee over, you know, rights, names, things like this. Went over to DC and did a very interesting run of DC. Did a Superman run, did like, you know, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen. And actually, one of my favorite ones is if you go look at the Forever People, which is this, looks like this sort of Manson Mad Max gang with weird vehicles, and there's Superman, like this crazy, very Kirby-esque period in DC. And there was some characters that he created that he ended up bringing back over. A name just escapes me that ended up he created in DC. Then he came back to Marvel. And I think it was like the Eternals was like his knockoff of actually something he did in DC. But these are some cool stuff here. So these are collections of non-Marvel, non-DC stuff were other stories. So this was Simon and Kirby together. So you've got Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. This is a collection of science fiction short stories, early ages. They're across the board as far as like how good they are, whatever. But it's neat, fun stuff. Really fun short reads. So this is the science fiction one. And this is the horror one of this sort of stuff. So you can check these out if you're looking for something fun to read. Just kind of pick these things up. The Simon and Kirby library. And I have one other pick. Man, I've said this before, but I'm going to repeat my pick. I was working on a little coding thing, and I'm like, man, you know, I need to figure out how to do this thing. And I went to the, tried to find a YouTube tutorial, but everything was sort of like a year or two out of date. And I go to like, I try to go to Udemy to find it. I couldn't find it there. I'm like, well, let me go check Lynda, you know, lynda.com, which is free in many places if you have a public library card. So I went to Lynda and I found exactly the tutorials I was looking for on some iOS stuff. They've got Android, iOS, all sorts of stuff. Lynda.com, L-Y-N-D-A. Check out your local library. Find out if you have electronic access because often it is free. And so you can get free access to tutorials on everything from Photoshop, creating business plans, marketing presentations. There is an incredible wealth of knowledge out there that is free or marginally free that just was never available before.
Right on.
Which will go into a little bit of an after things discussion, I think. So cool. Yeah. Everybody good?
We're not just good, we're the best.
It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.